notably in kind of the design and structure, right? Mm-hmm. Am I designing a system? Have I designed the structure that's going to allow my existing talent to perform at their best, right? Mm. Well, you could argue that it's a little bit of a luxury to spend time on that. But mm-hmm. I think oftentimes we forget that the organization itself, how we structure it, is an asset. It's an asset that needs to be managed like any other asset mm-hmm. in the firm. There's a quote, and I'm going to date myself because it goes back many, many years, but Gary Rumler on great organizations, you put a good performer in a bad system and the system wins every time, right? Yeah. And that's as true as it was many, many years ago, true today as it was many, many years ago.
Hello and welcome to the Unicorn Leadership Podcast. My name is Fahad Al-Hattab. I'm your host. And this is where we interview leaders on their journey of building high-performing teams, on their journey of becoming an effective manager and leader. And our goal is to bring you the insights, the tools, so that you get to learn from them and you don't make the same mistakes that we've all made. Or perhaps you simply make those mistakes, learn to reframe them and overcome them. This podcast is brought to you by Unicorn Labs, where we transform managers into leaders that create high-performing teams that scale. You can feel free to check us out at unicornlabs.ca. And today's guest is Krista Sclade. She's the operating partner and chief talent officer at Innova Capital. And she joins me to discuss creating a talent strategy for startups. Krista shares key questions to consider when reviewing your organizational structure and building a talent strategy to ensure an easy flow of decisions through your organization. You know, we have a really great conversation about talent strategies and hiring and all the things that the difficult decisions that startups need to make, especially in the context of an economy that we're in today with a downturn economy, with a challenging tech market, with VC money not flowing the same way that it always has. How do we make some of the decisions regarding our talent strategies? One of the frameworks that Krista shares is how organizational design looks at team structures, processes, and decision-making. And how often most of us, and as founders, we're not really looking at organizational design in the same way. We're not spending time really building out what does that ideal team structure looks like. Probably and often because when we talk about organizational design, people think of governance charts. But it's not about the governance chart. It's not about the hierarchy, but it's about how the organization flows. What are the teams and what are the team of teams that it makes up? Organizational health checks are important. So it allows us to have a little pulse on what's happening within our organization. And the structure in which we have our teams is equally important in allowing us to have those health checks. So understanding our team health and the cross team and how we've designed those structures in your business is going to be the key insights that Krista shares with us. What do you consider when you're designing your organization? And I'd love for each and every one of us to actually do this exercise. Often when coaching our executive teams, we get them to do this exercise, which is go and build your ideal team chart. If you had all the money and you had all, if you know where you're going in a year from now, 2 years from now, what sort of team do you need? What does the team structure look like? Go and build out the kind of ideal, non-restrictive, non-resource restrictive roles here. And then start placing names in those roles. See who's already filling those roles. People who are probably wearing more than one hat. And start to get a picture of where you want to head. Where does the talent strategy want to go? And then where are you right now? And look at those comparisons. See, Krista dives deep into two reasons of why you should consider these sort of team structure exercises. First, you have to think about growth and whether your growth is significant enough to match the team structure that you've now outlined. Is the growth significant enough to consider continued talent acquisition? Should we continue hiring? And secondly, we reach a point where you realize the evolution of your organization and the complexity of its products and solutions does the existing team structure help me get to the next evolution, the next stage of where I need to go, or do I need a little bit of a reorg? So we're going to wrap up the episode with Krista by sharing thoughts about two trends that must be considered: the skill set for managers and how they look today versus how they looked at 5 years ago, 10 years ago. What is different today for the skills of managers? And when we promote people into roles, the manager role is the one that they're often least prepared for. So if what we're looking for in skill sets of managers today, what are we training for? What are we getting them to? What skills are we willing as an organization to help them build? Today's managers need to balance collaboration with an asynchronous remote environment, and the use of technology is only going to help them do that, and how they actually have those their ability to actually utilize those technological tools. So if you find this episode helpful, let us know. Send a little Twitter note. My handle is Fahad Al-Hattab, or send us a message on LinkedIn. Let us know what you're liking. Let's go to another clip here with Krista to hear more about what she had to say.
The third element I was going to add was understanding the impacts of organizational decisions on people themselves. And that does have a cultural element. A classic example, and I think this applies for startups, your first VP people hire. Does that person report into the CEO, report into someone else? Because it will have an impact on the message it sends downstream, right? What value do we place on people?
The value we place on people is ultimately what our talent strategy is going to get us to. How we design our organization, how we design our processes, and then what value do we place on people and the importance of team and collaboration? That is how we mesh the two. So we're going to dive into Krista's episode. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to learn from Krista, who is the Chief Talent Officer at Innova Capital, about all the different strategies she helps startups implement to drive business performance and drive growth at the portfolio companies. Without further ado, this is episode 16 of the Unicorn Leaders Podcast. Well, hello, Krista, and welcome to our Unicorn Leaders Podcast. You're the first episode we're recording in 2023. Now, by the time the episodes go out, this might be the second or third episode that goes out in 2023, but we're excited to have you. Happy New Year. Do you have a good time in the holidays? You spent a little time in Jamaica?
I did. I spent time in warmth and sunshine, needed for the body and the soul. It was amazing.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. That's great. Oh, Krista, I'm really excited for our episode today because our episode is all about talent strategies. And talent strategies in the reality the economy that we're facing here in 2023, especially with a lot of our tech companies, right? We've seen major layoffs over 2022. We've seen layoffs announced at the end of 2022 into 2023. Whether it's the big fan companies or whether it's, startups taking a time to realize that they're probably going to raise a down round in the coming years. If they are planning on raising, it might not get the same evaluations. And so everyone's looking at cuts and layoffs. And the reason we look at cuts and layoffs is because labor is usually 66% of costs of most startups, right? Like if not more, it's the biggest piece. So a lot of people are talking talent strategies. What do I do with talent? What do I do with our labor force? How do we make the most of our team? How do we protect them from the downturns? All of those different pieces. And Krista, you have some phenomenal experience with talent strategies. You have some phenomenal experience with venture capital funds. Maybe I'll toss that question off to you. We'll start off with that big question. 2023 talent strategies. What should our startup leaders be thinking about?
It's a great question, Fahd, and it's a great question to start the year. Although, in some ways, it could have been a great episode at the end of 2022 as well. At any time, it's an important topic because I don't think the idea of talent strategies, we probably don't spend enough time at any point in time, right, discussing them. And I think that's why, or defining them, not just discussing them, but defining what they are. And I think that's why going into situations that we are in 2023 across many companies, right? You identified the FANG earlier, whether it be tech startups, but I think we're seeing it across the board, is using this as an opportunity to really reflect on what is it in my organization system, right? Thinking of that as the system that we might want to improve on, right? It's a good moment to take stock, to reflect, and look at what those improvement areas are. Notably in kind of the design and structure, right? Am I designing a system? Have I designed the structure that's going to allow my existing talent to perform at their best, right? You could argue that it's a little bit of a luxury to spend time on that, but I think oftentimes we forget that the organization itself, the how we structure it, is an asset. It's an asset that needs to be managed like any other asset in the firm. There's a quote, and I'm going to date myself because it goes back many, many years, but Gary Rumler on great organizations, you put a good performer in a bad system and the system wins every time, right? Yeah. And that's as true as it was many, many years ago, true today as it was many, many years ago. So really thinking about that organization as a system, I think it then prepares where we're seeing this downturn. We know that that's going to change and we'll start hiring, and maybe not at the frenzied pace that we were hiring in 2022. But again, it allows for that, when that upturn happens, when we're kind of on that track again, you've given some thought to what your system looks like to bring the right talent into place. And then I think the other parts of that, right? So it starts, that to me is almost the foundation of it. And then you start looking at, okay, what are the other components, whether it be process and decision-making, your skills and competencies, right? All of those other pieces that come into play that define that total system. My sense is we tend to do two things. We place a lot of emphasis on talent acquisition professionals in terms of bringing the right talent in, right? We talk a lot about bringing that right talent into the right culture. So we'll do culture initiatives. And then there's this big piece in between that to make the jump from the good talent and kind of the culture piece of an organization, we forget about all of the other pieces that make up. I could bring in, you know, high performing talent and put all the cultural initiatives in place, but if my org structure is hindering people from performing, if my decision-making processes are cumbersome and long, if I don't have the tools in place, I'm not going to get to that cultural outcome with my good talent, right?
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. So we're looking at organizational systems. We're looking at how we've designed the team structures and whether those team structures truly empower high performers, right? What are those processes? What are some of those decision making? What are the skill competencies that we actually need, right? And so that's all the space in between what you're saying. All those pieces is in between the, you know, hire better than you, you know, hire people better than you, which is, you know, the idiom that we all use, right? Talent acquisition, hire really good people and give them a good culture. But we're talking about the systems in between that that's going to really allow for that. And perhaps that can also shed light in some of the, you know, as much as we can talk about some of the talent systems that we need for 2023, we can also perhaps look at some of the talent mistakes that we've made over the last number of years as, you know, some of that hyper hiring and hiring frenzies that kind of happen in competition for talent that maybe we're seeing the fallout from, you know, in kind of this piece. So that's really interesting. Yeah. So that really sets us up, Krista, for this episode. Those are kind of some of the pieces that we're going to be going out. I think it's a little good agenda, a little table of contents for our listeners who are going through this, interested in how they create the right organizational systems for their teams and their startups to succeed. But Krista, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you right now in your career? And we're gonna go back, but where are you right now? Tell me a little bit about the fund that you work for and the role that you play day to day.
Yeah. So I am an operating partner and chief talent officer at Inovia Capital. Inovia is a Canadian Montreal headquartered venture capital firm that last year celebrated our 15-year anniversary. So been around for 15 years. Started with venture, early stage venture in 2018, added a growth component, a growth team to that. And then over the past couple of years have been building out a platform services team. So it started with one individual in M&A Corp Dev. He's recently expanded his team. So now they're a team of two, brought in talent. So that's when I joined in 2021. My colleague, Steve Woods, joined to head up our technology practice. And then we have our head of marketing and communications working with our portfolio companies on their marketing and communication needs. So it's really looking at nothing exceptional in venture capital. I would argue that our tech practice and Corp Dev is the M&A practice are probably more unique in venture capital today. You know, whether in Canada and especially in the US, you've got a lot of venture capital firms that have their heads of talent, heads of marketing and communications, kind of working with portfolio companies on different initiatives. Yeah. The other uniqueness potentially about my role is I also have remit over Inovia's internal HR practice.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. That's really cool. So you've got this real depth of experience. Now, Krista, you get to play this fun role now with these portfolio companies, working on talent strategies, right? Really being a part of what, you know, really up and coming Canadian startups, right? And being able to be at the forefront of that. But you weren't always here, and you weren't always. Take me back a little bit. Some of the lessons that you're going to share with us likely came from some of your own personal experiences as you kind of started. But let's go back, you know, a little further. Where'd you grow up? Where's home? Where was university? Where was a little bit of that? Where was the first job? I don't know, you know, just.
All right. Wow. So the home is Niagara Falls. I was born and raised in Niagara Falls. My parents are there, aunts, uncles, cousins, still have a couple of friends who stayed. Left Niagara Falls to go to Ottawa for a year at Carleton. Did a year in Ottawa and realized there's too much snow in Ottawa.
that I can agree with.
There was a program that was advertised across Canadian universities at the time. It was an academic program run by Laurentian University in the south of France. So just outside of Nice in a little town called Villefranche-sur-Mer. And the academic program was probably one of the most innovative things I've ever seen. You could come from any university across Canada and you did all of your electives at this campus in the south of France. All of your electives were done, and they had professors from around the world, really, you know, just kind of the content and the way they taught. English writers of the Mediterranean was taught in the cafes that Hemingway wrote in. So all of a sudden, you know, the relevance of these things became. So I think that was my first taste of living. Well, it was my first taste of living abroad, but really kind of that, ooh, I'm liking this living abroad thing.
This is cool. I mean, it's cool. It's cool to me that you use the word innovative and academic in the same sentence, right? often, you know, institutions are criticized for not being, especially our academic institutions, education, for being kind of behind or a bit slow in catching up with what is happening. So that is really cool that that program existed. Cool. Keep going.
Great, great opportunity. So that did my second year there, and then I was asked to stay on as a student liaison coordinator. So I did, because you don't say no to an opportunity like that, despite my parents saying, well, wait a minute, does this mean you're not finishing your degree yet? So I did take a little break. I took a break to play this role for a couple of years, and then realized by the end of it that okay, it was time to go home. It was time to finish that degree, and decided to do it. I was so impressed by Laurentian University in this academic program that they ran that I bit the bullet and moved to Sudbury to finish my degree. In and of itself was a different experience. I had never seen myself moving to Sudbury, Ontario, but it was a year and a half to finish my degree, and I just made the most of it because it's a unique part of the world. It's, you know, has its own kind of, there's some cultural elements to it that were a great learning experience, but I wasn't done with the travel yet. I knew that, So I headed to Japan because I had met someone along the way. And so this stint in Japan was working for a cultural institute. And this was probably my first, I had no idea that I wanted a career in, I studied political science. I thought I wanted to be Prime Minister of Canada. but this was probably the foray into HR and talent. So it was a cultural institute that trained professionals who were moving to North America. And often, sometimes like at that time, the Japanese would send folks over to corporates and they'd have like a year or two time spend, right? So this was my first foray into talent development, training, et cetera, right? And I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was fascinating, apart from the experience of living in Japan. So did that for a year. While I was in Japan, I met a Frenchman who, that Frenchman many years now later, is my husband. So we moved to Paris and I continued with that same kind, found another training institute that did similar work, found myself more and more working with HR professionals and thought, okay, this is, I'm now going to bite that bullet. Yeah. And joined a competency development firm that was opening an office in Toronto. It was time to move back to Canada. I had been out of the country for maybe 4 or 5 years at that point. So moved to Toronto and did competency development work. And I'll never forget this because it was with one of the big banks. And the competency model that was used involved getting groups of people together. And it was the Lominger competency model. So you had these card decks and people would select kind of where they thought skills were. And I remember at one point thinking, there's a lot of emphasis on the individual, the performer, right? In this large bank in Canada, and we're putting a lot of emphasis on the individual, you know, and left that in my head as kind of a, And then I ended up joining a startup, met a couple of folks here in Toronto who worked for a Silicon Valley-based startup called Saba Software that did learning management. So today, Saba ended up going public while I was with them. And then when I moved to the Middle East many years later, they showed up on a private equity investment committee as a take private. So today, Saba is owned by Cornerstone On Demand. But that was a unique opportunity to start looking at process, right? In that I was hired to work with existing customers or future customers on redesigning some of those talent processes, right? And all of a sudden I started thinking, okay, this is where we take it from. It's not just, we're not putting the individual at the heart of this, right? Where improvement only happens there. It is, there's a bit more of a system element to it. Through that work at Saba, I had the opportunity to, Saba had acquired a small consulting firm called Exemplary Performance that looked at job design, right? So this was another building block to it where I thought, okay, the way we design, not just the processes, but the way we design jobs, the way we think about them, how explicit we are in accountabilities and, in those job descriptions, not just because we need them to hire the good people, right? They have meaning in their execution. So I was with Saba, stayed with them through to IPO and about a year and a half after, and then just decided it was my time to move on. Wasn't sure what I was going to do. And the individual who owned the firm that Saba had acquired called Exemplary Performance, he had left as well. And he called me and he said, listen, I have a project that I'm starting with Microsoft, would love to have you come join me. And I was like, oh, how do you do that? You know, I didn't have, I wasn't a company. He wasn't looking to hire me full time. So I called a friend of my dad's who's accountant and an accountant. I said, how do I do this? So I did it and it ended up being 7 years of the project with Microsoft lasted 5 years. And it was fascinating thought as we think about this system issue. So Microsoft, it was at that point where, you know, there was that Microsoft could afford to have a consultant on staff full time. Not just one. But I had a desk out in Seattle, was out there every couple of weeks. flew around the world for them, went to Brazil, Colombia, Vietnam, Malaysia, India, all over Europe, so all over the US. So it was fascinating from that perspective. But what continues to strike me, it was at the time that Microsoft was thinking about getting rid of their performance management process, right? So doing away with performance reviews.
Did they have the rank and pull system, like where you rank them and they pulled the bottom 10? Yeah,
they did
the bell curve. Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, they had promoted, I think it was close to 4,000 promoted or hired 4,000 managers without any kind of training whatsoever. So what was interesting about this, it was truly a design project, right? Like really thinking of, we're not going to say 4,000 people, managers, figure it out. We're going to design something that makes sense. We're not going to rip out performance management and say, hey, managers, figure out how you're going to do that.
Yeah.
Let's think about that from a process. So really put in place kind of these manager of excellence and manager, if you were at that next level, programs that helped them with defining kind of what are the behaviors, what are the outputs, it wasn't even about behaviors or skills and competencies. It was really, what are the tangible outputs as it related to people management, right? So all of this remains in the realm of talent and people management. That then turned into another project that started into more of the organization, the system thinking. At the time, there was a project that they had embarked on called One Microsoft, because they were finding that for most of their clients, because they were product organized, they would end up three different teams showing up at a client site and causing havoc for the client and knowing, why are all these Microsoft people here from different organization. So that was kind of my first taste into, okay, designing systems, making organizational decisions has an impact on how well your performers can perform.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think we forget that. We put, for organizational design, I think is often equated with, yeah, I've got my org chart. I put my org chart somewhere.
Yeah.
I put some boxes on a PowerPoint, or I use Lucid charts or something, and I'm good. Right. But I think we forget that as an asset that enables people, that design is important, right? It really is kind of a, so all of this led to these building blocks that, for me, that was a big aha moment. Also the time that my husband and I, the French guy from Japan.
the French guy from Japan. There's.
We ended up, we decided to move back to France. So I continued doing some work with Microsoft's European team that I had gotten to know quite well. And then I thought, you know what? I think this is it. Not sure I was ready for it, but I think this is it. It's time to go the route of the big consulting firm. So leveraged my network and got an intro to Oliver Wyman and joined Oliver Wyman in their organization and leadership practice. Because I knew it was one of the places where all of those different pieces were going to come together.
Uh-huh. Right? Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to pause because that's a lot.
That's a lot of fascinating experience and really cool for it to kind of see how it all comes together, right? Like both your journey, your career journey, I think is phenomenal for people to hear and learn from, but even just the different insights and the different mistakes that we see large organizations make, right? Let alone our startups that are 20, 30, 50 people, 100 people, right? Like, sometimes, you might not make the same mistake as Microsoft sending several teams to a client because you don't have 5,000 employees, and maybe that's not your current problem. But in the microcosmic of your, 100 person team, where are those same organizational flaws and mistakes happening where multiple people are maybe trying to service the same problem without talking to each other and so on and so
forth.
Absolutely.
Right? I always like to say, like, don't become owning this now. You don't become the consultant's dream project, right? Because basically the consultant's dream project is you undo things,
yeah,
right?
Don't become the consultant's dream project. Right? That's hilarious. You know, I think even you know, Shopify, beloved Shopify, Toby, I think at one point CEO of Shopify had written a tweet which was like, you know, he talked about the amount of management consultant a startup will need could be an equation to the potential lack of success. Because if you need that much management consultant that early on, like, what's going on? You know, like, it was a little shot at consultants for sure, but it was also a shot at you know, should you be tangling up that many, you know, different pieces?
Yeah. And Bob, I'm convinced that, like, after that, after kind of the, this is, it really is about that, thinking of the organization as a system, right? Where you're really from the people and your people processes, your structure, the cultural element, your leadership practices, and almost doing that. And to give the big consulting firms credit where credit is due, it was McKinsey that started it with kind of these organizational health checks. Yes. It doesn't have to be a big complicated, but it's almost, we do it with our financials. We do it with our IT equipment, right? Sometimes not always well. But
we wait for it to break.
But we kind of have an inventory and you can do a bit of a check on.
Yeah.
We rarely do it with our organizational system. Yeah. And that system could be as small as the 30-person company, right? Or as big as the 30,000-person company.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. And it's you know, it's the first thing, I think it's the first thing we do when we start working with clients, and less from a full, you know, organizational management perspective, but we do a team dynamics assessment. And that's exactly what it is, which is a health check on the relationships of the team members and their effectiveness and their ability to work together. And so we've got a 36 point system that we use in a survey that we've, you know, gone through several research methods around, but it's exactly that. It's to kind of get a diagnosis of how's your team health. Yeah. How are the relationships with the leaders and the relationship with individuals, and then how's cross team health, right? Mm-hmm. And it's perhaps less about the organizational design that you're talking about, but it's a piece of it, which is the team dynamics and the philosophy and the values and those pieces, which are pillars of larger organizational design, right? So,
yeah, absolutely. And sometimes those diagnostics can reveal, right? There might be some root causes in other parts of the system that are impacting. Right, that team dynamic.
Yeah, it's very, very, very accurate, very true. And reflecting on some of my own clients and teams that I've worked on, right, where organizational structure and the process was the problem, and no matter who we plugged into it, you know, what sort of team we plugged into it, it was just breaking year after year, and it had to do with the actual structure. So help us. Let's dive into that for a second, because I think most of us, and probably listening here, and me a few years ago for sure, would have said, "Well, organizational structure is a governance chart, Krista. What are you talking about? What are you talking? What is organizational structure if it's not the governance chart and it's the authority flows and it's, you know, the who's manager and who are the teams? Like, that's my understanding of an organizational structure. So if you're saying I need to check in on this, and let's say, you know, I'm a 100-person team, we're not a 5,000 person team, but what am I looking at 100 person team, you know, 75 person team when we're talking about organizational structure?
Yeah. Sometimes, Fad, I think it is the there's the check-in on it, but it's where most of your broken processes, right, that's hindering performance. So making sure that flow of decisions, whatever those decisions are, right, that they flow through your organization chart in such a way that it's not, oh my God, because I've structured this way, this team is now blocking, right?
Yeah.
I think that's one, a lot of is reflection. If there's a checklist of questions, there are many, you know, I can send you one on afterwards, but just kind of that checklist of questions that you just want to be mindful of, right? The second one is where I've put some of my teams, right? Because there's no such thing as a perfect organizational design. Right. Mm-hmm. There's nowhere in the world is there one single organizational design that's perfect. That org chart, org structure will depend on where the business is at, what you're trying to do, right? What type of organization, what you're trying to achieve, what the strategy and outcomes are. What it shouldn't be is people driven. And I know that sounds like almost counterintuitive, but it shouldn't be, I'm creating my organization structure because I need Sally in this position, right? My organization structure should be created in such a way because it helps me achieve what I'm looking to achieve, right? And we all, I'll hold my hand up. I've done it. Make mistakes on designing organizations around people rather than kind of what the business needs or what the outcomes are that I'm trying to drive.
And I really like that. If I can just hold on to that, because I think so often in business we use sports analogies, and in sports you can build a team around individuals, right? You're kind of like, okay, we've got one or two superstars, so we're going to build a team around them. And so sometimes people think that, I've got these two great salespeople, these two great engineers, I'm going to build a team around them. But I guess what I'm hearing you say is that organizational structure, if we do that, there's a huge risk. There's risk of them leaving, and then your structure doesn't work. Your system doesn't work without them. And there needs to be a counterbalance there, right? There needs to be the system still needs to work no matter who really you place in those roles, you know, given a certain talent level, right? Like there's always that.
And that, I mean, it's not to say that we won't make those decisions sometimes, you know, World Cup soccer, if you looked at Argentina, right? You make a certain decision and structure around a person, but you need to be clear on that, what your rationale for doing it is, the time frame, right? That it isn't a sustainable structure, right? And you're already thinking about what are my options post that departure, what's my succession plan option and how I might need to restructure accordingly. Right. So it's more about not thinking that once it's done, it's a check, right? That it's a living document. It's something that evolves over time and should be checked in. The third element I was going to add was understanding the impacts of organizational decisions on people themselves. And that does have a cultural element. A classic example, and I think this applies for startups, your first VP people hire, does that person report into the CEO, report into someone else? Because it will have an impact on the message it sends downstream, right?
Okay, let's walk through that.
Do we place on people?
Yeah.
Are people a cost reporting in the CFO, right?
Because that's often what we see, right? VP of talent reports into CFO. Yeah.
And it's not in any way to say that that's a wrong design decision. There's no right, wrong, right? But it does have impacts, and being aware of what those are, right? The perception that it could bring to others in that way. So then you want to look for other levers to say, okay, this was a design decision because a spans and layers question with the CEO, because of what we need the CEO to focus on in the business. So we were limiting the number of direct reports. Those are all great design considerations. That's why we're doing this. Let's now think of what we might need to do, if I use the VP of people as an example, to make sure that those perceptions that it could cause, the impact that it could have, are mitigated, right? Yeah. So to me, it's all about the trade-offs that you're making in some of those design decisions.
Yeah. I think those are some really good pieces. So let's go through a few more design decision examples for organizational structures and kind of at that high level, some questions that I often get, which is, when is the right time to bring in a VP of talent?
Right.
What size, how much, you know, see after my Series A, is it when I'm trying to hire a lot, you know, or do I just need extra recruiters? Like when is a VP of talent the right time? And obviously, again, there's no right answer, but let's give some ranges and some parameters or indicators and events that kind of trigger the need.
Yeah. And I don't want to put it at a series stage.
Okay.
You know, I think we'll see if you looked at, and if you did it on Google, or maybe even ChatGPT can give you an answer now.
Yeah, I should ask chat GPT. Yeah.
Frightening, but that's a whole other podcast. Yeah. you know, if you're looking at series stage, okay, series A, I'm not sure it's about the number of people today, because it's more about if I'm 50 people today and I'm going to stay 50 people for all of 2023 and maybe into early 2024. No, now's not. So it depends on what my hiring plan is, right?
Okay. Okay.
So if I am looking to grow significantly, and if that growth is significant enough that I want, I need to bring in someone from a talent acquisition perspective, I would carve that out as a specialty, right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily your VP of people bringing in to do just talent acquisition. Yeah. Right. So I'd want to make sure that that, I'd also look at the evolution of my organizational, if it's the same rough organization structure with more people in it, because I need more people to produce the work. If all of a sudden I'm getting more complex in terms of different solutions, products, that type, then I might want to consider, okay, now we've got someone, we've got enough complexity in the system that having someone to help complexity in a positive way, right? Like in a, our system is growing in depth. Now's the time to bring in someone who can be that, the partner with the CEO on, okay, what are some of those process, my organizational design decisions, right? Mm. Continuing to kind of give that type of reflection around.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Good, 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 good answer. It makes, I mean, makes sense, makes sense to me. And really is about that growth and about that reflection of what the next step is for organizational design. Is this the right time, based on where we're going and what the CEO kind of needs and help for? So that's a big part of organizational design, and you took us through a few different pieces of organizational design in the beginning of my first question, Krista, and maybe it's time for us to kind of get back and dig a little deeper into some of those pieces. So part of organizational design is, you know, as you've mentioned here, looking at design and the structure, so team structures, looking at processes, and looking at decision making. I think decision-making is the interesting piece. I'm going to pick on it. And the reason I think it's the interesting piece is I think ultimately all organizations try and scale by effectively and efficiently decentralizing decision-making, right? It's what we've got to do. So the idea of growing a team is so that you can pass down decision-making to those who are closest to the problem and the information in order to create an organization that scales. Otherwise, you still have one person at the top. And often, the more bureaucratic an organization, the more decision-making flows upwards, where information flows upwards to those who make the decisions versus the more nimble startups, and why we can sometimes see startups really, you know, the David and Goliath story. David, you know, is able to beat Goliath. Our startups are able to beat the big corporates is because they are more nimble and able to make decisions faster, more effectively, and closer to the information. So let's look at the relationship between I'm a startup CEO. I'm thinking about decision making and empowering my employees. And how does talent strategy play into that? How does organizational system play into that? What questions should I be asking myself? What things should I be thinking about?
So back to me, it's the point five of if you know, knowing what those decisions are being made, not controlling them, not having to have a say in them, not making sure that flows up to committees and governance decision-making bodies in any way, shape, or form, right? This is more about understanding what kind of decisions, what those decisions are, and are there any roadblocks if my product team, if the product team needs to make decisions, but there isn't that right structure or flow to the engineering team, that will definitely, it'll either stagnate completely, right? Mm-hmm. Or will end up being an escalation flow, or will end up being separate decisions that happen, and then you end up with the challenges, right? So,
yeah,
you know, to me, that's the reflection, that's the monitoring in the worst, not the worst possible word I could use, but I think you know what I mean. Just it's a, yeah, like you monitor your health, you kind of, you know, you got a sense of what's going on. to make sure that none of those roadblocks that could happen in an organization are happening. Mm-hmm. I think we sometimes leave it to chance in some ways, rather than spend the time, and I won't put a number or an amount or hours to that time, but there is a discussion. It's done through surveys. It's done through discussions with senior team, but making it a point of discussion,
yeah,
is really the right. What are we sensing? What are we experiencing in terms of roadblocks? Right, where might they be coming from?
Yeah,
and that could result in. It could result. I mean, one of the outcomes could be that, you know, a committee of some sort, a meeting, a regular standing of something, but where you're facilitating that decision-making, it doesn't have to mean a full-blown organizational redesign, right? Because there might be issues with decision-making at between two teams.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's having that checklist of questions, the things that you want to make sure you're checking in on with each of your leaders or managers, first understanding what those decisions are, where they sit, what are they being asked to decide on, and then having regular check-ins, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Getting a sense of what those decisions are, I think, is key. And getting a sense of what the themes of decisions are across the organization. There often is probably, you know, constant, you know, there's the constant battle of sales, you know, promising the next thing where product hasn't built it yet, and customer service is dealing with customer service is dealing with the client who's been sold something that isn't here yet because sales tried to push it through to get to there at the next. You know, and you're dealing with that. The roadmap, product roadmap, is usually one of the biggest around decision making, right? And the biggest problem, and where you get several teams there. So zooming back out a little bit again, talent strategy. What are some of the most common problems you're seeing with your portfolio companies and the companies that you're working with in regards to their talent strategy? What are the typical kind of maybe pitfalls, traps that a lot of our startups, maybe our new entrepreneurs or young entrepreneurs are falling into, and some of the common mistakes when it comes to some of the talent strategy for us to watch out for?
Yeah. It's a great question, you know, as it relates specifically to the topics that we've been discussing here. I think part of that on the decision, especially in those first hires, right, where it might be, whether it be VP people, whether it be your VP marketing, is that missed step. So we spend time on the job description, right? Mm-hmm. But really thinking about from an org design, if you're, where does this function sit within my organization? And having a couple of options, right? Thinking through, not having options because you can't make the decision on which one, but exploring different options and what their impacts could be, I think makes for a better candidate experience. I think it helps with talent attraction, right? If I can come into an interview process and know that the leader in front of me has given thought to, you know, here's a design option that we explored this. Yeah. Here's are the pros and cons for where we're at today. It doesn't mean it won't evolve over time, right? Mm-hmm. So just being really thoughtful, mindful, reflective on what those options are when you're designing that, especially your first senior roles. The senior, you know, even as growth happens, when all of a sudden there's that split between organizational functions, right? Another area is
we'll go back to the other areas. So in terms of first hires and kind of first C-suite hires, you know, this is always interesting, right? If you've got a number of managers there before and now you're bringing on a C-suite, a little bit of power dynamics, a little bit of team dynamic changes happen there. You know, you're really thinking about the design. So I think those are some things to think about, right? So if you're not promoting from within, you're bringing in external compensation for that person, typically looks much different than compensation for the rest of the team. It really starts to open up a can of worms for some founders who don't really know how to deal with it. And I've worked with some founders where they try to avoid dealing with some of the fallout, the team dynamics, pieces as you start to bring in leadership? And what are, you know, I guess, what are some of the common mistakes there? So, I mean, I'll start off by naming one. Often, you know, I will talk to leaders about, if you're going to bring in a senior person, make sure they know how to start fires, not just put out fires. And what I mean by that is that if you're coming from a little bit more corporate or consulting, you know, you're used to maybe putting out fires, you know, management by making sure that everything is running. But at a startup, we need people who can start fires, who can start the engine and get it going. So it's a little more proactive than maybe reactive. And it's a simplified way of thinking for sure. There's a lot of nuances to it. Mm-hmm. But it's to say, like, you're looking for that kind of leadership. And so that's one that I've seen as a common mistake. But what are some of those common mistakes you see when bringing on some of the kind of the C-suite individuals?
You probably identified the biggest one. Those who don't want to deal with it, right? You have to deal with it, right? You can't bring in that senior role and say, maybe no one will notice, right?
Yeah.
I'll just have that person do their job and maybe no one will notice that I slipped that one in, right? So being explicit about it, right? Being able to answer the questions about the person who holds up their hand and says, why wasn't it me, right? Yeah. Been with you since day one, why wasn't it me?
And sometimes it's friends, sometimes it's people who are close, right? Like, you know, I think there's a famous example in Amazon. Bezos had to do it. He put in a chief technology officer in front of, you know, one of his close people who helped save the company in early days. And that was a big fallout. We sometimes are uncomfortable with those, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that is a muscle. It's a muscle that, you know, you need to exercise to realize you have, exercise it, flex it sometimes. Mm-hmm. But ignoring it is never an option. I've seen some great practices that help facilitate that, right? And I think that does include when people who do come into those roles are ready themselves to address it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So where you kind of get your immediate direct reports together and have that, ask me the questions, right? Submit them anonymously in advance, but address them right from the start. I think those.
Any thoughts on when's a good time to bring in a COO? Sometimes like a second in command sort of role. That's always an interesting one too, right? There's I'm throwing a lot of questions at you.
I think it's great because that one, there is a design decision around that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's a size decision. There's a design decision. I'd also argue that there's a little bit of a complementarity to skill set in the CEO, right? Where it could be at
in that case, stage. You are designing around a person a bit,
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that, again, to go back to the very first point, we shouldn't design around people. We do, and it will happen, right?
Yeah.
So it's just being conscious of why it's happening, right? Yeah. Mindful of that. Is it sustainable? Is there a light shelf life to this, right? Mm-hmm. Either to the COO role or to other roles that we bring in. But I had lost my train of thought on something I was going to say. Sorry, Fad.
No worries. I'm the one jumping around quite a bit here.
I had two experiences that aren't necessarily startup experience, although one you could consider it a little bit of a startup within big corporate because it was an electrical vehicle project between Peugeot and BMW when I was living in France, and they were starting a company together, an EV vehicle company. And it was one of the most horrific organizational design projects, not only because of the cultural element, because we haven't talked about culture, right? I think we're thinking of this more from a, you know, different cultures in Canada, but not necessarily country cultures working together. So that was there were cultural challenges there, just differences in in people and how work gets done. And right. So that was, that had an added element to it, but they refused to kind of think about how the organization would be structured. There were going to be two CEOs, co-CEOs, one French, one German. And basically, as this project evolved, their organizational design ended up being two companies, right? Because co-CEO German didn't want to lose his XYZ person, and co-CEO Peugeot, French guy, didn't want to lose his XYZ person. So you had two parallel organizations, right? And that had, right? So it was just one of those. But for them, it was going to work. The people were going to make it work. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. The people will make it work.
Yeah.
I was with a consulting firm at the time. So the deliverable was the PowerPoint presentation. So I won the PowerPoint presentation.
I gave you my recommendations and that's all I can do for now. Yeah.
And then, you know, the news article came out that was a failed startup by these two big automotive companies. But
Well, when you ignored these design decisions, I think this is, you know, the big theme here you're saying is that if we ignore and are unintentional about organizational design decisions and structure, and we think we can, you know, often we don't think about it. You just say, okay, your marketing team, your engineering team, you're this team, right? Like put them in buckets and go and let them self-organize. And if that's the extent to which we are thinking about team design or organizational design, then there are natural flaws that are going to happen, right? For decision-making flows and so on and so forth. So I took us a little bit off topic on that, you know, when to bring in a C-suite. What are some of the other problems and challenges that you see facing talent strategies in 2023 kind of for startups that are listening in?
Yeah. You know, I think that this in general, right? This is more the, to me, that was this, our topic, this big topic right now was really about, it's a good time to take stock, right?
Yeah.
And it's also going to be a difficult time because there's other things happening in the business that require a lot more focus, right?
Yeah.
So in no way would I want to leave here and say, your 2023 should only be about looking at your organization design and organizational health. Your 2023 is going to be about a whole lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
Now is a good time to also include that, not, you know, as a sole focus, but to start building it into practice, into your own practice. Mm-hmm. You made a comment that had me think of, you know, we might be focusing a little bit on this from a startup CEO perspective. My advice is to look for people, especially as you make some of those first senior hires, is look for people who bring this themselves. You shouldn't have to do it all on your own, right? Mm-hmm. You want to hire those senior people who can bring that same kind of design thinking into their teams. To me, as a CEO, is making sure that those I shouldn't be in no way going deep into each of those organizations to understand that, but I should have the layer of people that can do that. And then my role is simply to make sure that cross for that team. I think that's where more of the team dynamic work comes in, assuming that they've, right, are taking care of kind of in their own functions that way. So, you know, to me, this is more about if I were to pick a muscle that I want to start building this year, that would be it. This would be a good year to do that.
Yeah.
The other one that's a little bit, I mean, it's talent strategy related, but less about the organizational design in some way, although I guess we could put it in that bucket, is, you know, I think the remote hybrid in the midst of all of this is potentially going to be even more challenging. Mm. Right? Because the impact of layoffs, does it mean less work? Is there less work? Are the layoffs creating more work?
Yeah.
For people who are already feeling, as you know, we all know it, quite a bit of burnout. And we've left this layer of remote hybrid into it. It'll be interesting to see the impacts on that? I know from within our portfolio, our own portfolio, looking at the strategies, the tactics, the ways in which we're trying to bring people back in the office, not at a full time. This isn't about, but for meaningful time, right? Making that time that you're in just as meaningful. So the design in there is the design of work, right? I'd almost argue if I had the luxury of manager training, that would be the skill that I'd focus on for managers, right? Yeah. Is thinking about how work gets designed.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And making that so that I'm intentional about, I need my group of 10 people in the office on this day, and here's the things that we're going to work on. Not, I need my 10 people here all sitting on their own working on something, right?
Yeah. I think more than ever, we're teaching managers facilitation and scrum skills. Like, how do you, not that you're running maybe a full agile scrum, but you're just, how do you get people together in a room to actually unpack a decision and do design thinking? It used to be that, certain people need to learn design thinking skills. Every manager needs to learn design thinking skills because we need to learn how to democratize conversation, how to facilitate a brainstorming, a team meeting session, because now you have less and less of them. Because and you need to pay to bring people in, and how do you maximize that, right? I think really learning to be an effective facilitator for those managers, as you're mentioning in that team, and like if you were to train these managers, what skill would you, right? That designing the job crafting is you mentioned job design. We do this job crafting workshop for a lot of companies, but it's available and easy for people to do themselves. But essentially, the manager, after 6 months of a person being in the job, says, okay, I know I gave you a job description, but it likely no longer matches now that you've been working in the job for 6 months. So let's recraft your job and let's design, what does it look like, right? And so that intentionality, I think, is really interesting. Yeah. Both those and the facilitation that you're mentioning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's been... excuse me, there's been a lot of really interesting kind of pieces that we're piecing together here from organizational structure, which looks at team structures, how we organize teams around a product, how we organize team decision making. We've talked about job designs or bringing in C-suite individuals. We've talked about some of the challenges that we see from hybrid work and remote work for our folks and our startups. With kind of a few moments left here together, Krista, what are some of the things that you'd like to share to our audience? Often you are at the forefront maybe of some of the trends that you're seeing as you get, you see a portfolio of startups. More often our CEOs that we're working with, they're really, head in the sand. They're working on their product. Maybe they're not looking at what all the other competition is doing, all the other startups. They just see the websites, they see the outside, they see the LinkedIn post, but they don't see the messy inside and realize that we're all pretty, disorganized at some level. They don't see the insides. What are some of the trends you're seeing that maybe we can leave our guests with as kind of things to look forward to?
I think, Fahd, I'm going to jump on that very last point, that the skill sets for managers are looking, they are looking very different. And we're already bad at, we always have been, right? We promote people into roles and the manager one is the one they're least prepared for. And now add new skills that none of us have really mastered yet to it. They're even more ill prepared for it. I'd argue the same is true of not all generations in the workforce, because I think our earlier career folks and folks who will enter the workforce will be more prepared for, not because there's a technology component to it, obviously there always is, but just in terms of how work happens, right? Not just the where it happens and whether I choose to work from a park or a in my office, you know, that not that kind of, but just how it happens. The balance between the collaboration versus the asynchronous, there's just a different flow to it than I think, you know, other generations had seen in the past, that we need to be prepared for. And that goes back to the managers are the ones who need to be prepared for, because they'll need to manage that. Obviously technology, you know, I have smarter colleagues than I who look at technology, but you know, they will definitely have a profound impact on, yeah, on some of the ways that we continue to collaborate. We have a network colleague who used to be with Google in an HR capacity and was sharing some information on things that are awesome, just in terms of that connection that could happen. You know, I'm sure this has happened to you. The number of times that now, after 2+ years of us interacting this way, where sometimes we forget, have I met you in person, Fahd, right? Yeah. I think that's going to get even worse or better, right? Depending on how you look at it. The flip side to it, I believe it will create more and more. You've seen it. I've seen it. And that's the comment I made around some of the things that our portfolio companies are looking at, is that intentionality of when people do get together, mm-hmm, what are you getting together for? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's just an intentionality to things that I think that will be more pronounced than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hear don't that. Know if that was as profound.
No,
as it
no, means. I think it was good. Right. I think intentionality. And I think that is the piece around, you know, when we talk about talent strategy design and the conversation of hybrid versus, you know, do we get people to come back in the office? And often my number one, you know, suggestion to a lot of our founders is, well, intentionality. If they're just coming back to the office just to sit in a room to be on Zoom again, there's no point in that. They're going to dislike you for that. But if you're saying, you know, you don't have to come here. Yeah. You don't have to come here once or twice a week, but you know what? At the last week of every month, we're all going to do a week from the office because we're going to, it's collaboration week. And during collaboration week, we do this and we do that. Then you've designed something and there's intention and people are coming for collaboration week. They're not coming to sit on their desk, the same thing at home, where at home I could be a little more comfortable. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that piece that you said that is so key. I think when we're looking at talent strategy, you've done a great job here, Krista, for shedding some light on some of the things to for us to look at, some of the things for our founders to really think about, and for our talent professionals as a whole. Thank you so much for being with us here today. Thank you for sharing about your personal life story and the journeys you've been on, the travels and everything, all the work that you've done from being a student ambassador to being a consultant with Microsoft and to being in Innova today and all the work that you're doing.
Awesome. Fahd, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Thank you, Krista, for the wonderful episode as you joined us here on our Unicorn Leaders podcast. Thank you to all the listeners who've gone all the way through. I hope you were able to take just as much away as I did through that episode, whether it's about when the right time is to hire your VP of talent or when is the right time to start engaging in a reorg and looking at team structures, or how do we build teams of teams and what did some of those processes look like? Or if honestly, you just were able to listen to someone who works at a venture capital firm and how they work with the other portfolio companies on designing talent and the way they think about talent. Krista's episode gave us a lot from her own personal experiences dealing with, as a consultant, dealing with Microsoft, all the way to her leading her own teams and to where she is today. And so I'm excited to have been able to put this together. But that's it for you. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Unicorn Leadership Podcast. You can find our show notes and transcript at unicornlabs.ca/podcast. And if you like the content, please be sure to rate it, to review it, to subscribe, hit the little notification button so that you get the next episode, and share it with a friend, share it with a colleague, put it in your work Slack communities, and get the word out there. The more that we can help, the more managers, the more leaders that we can help in our tech communities hear some of these lessons by our leaders, the better it is for all of us. And that's it for now.